This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 618, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 618. I'm Connor Kilpatrick. This is Josh Flanagan.
Hi.
And we are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call it the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book, some other books from the week, your patron pick. We do some patron powers. We have some fun. That's the main thing. Josh, has it been a weirdly light 2 weeks for you?
This week wasn't light. Last week was, but I'm always quite happy about that. Mainly just because like I don't like to have to read 20 comic books in a short period of time and then like be able to process them. So 10 or so seems pretty doable, but I've also had backlog to keep up on. I don't know.
It was weird. I had 12 last week, and I think I had like 14 this week, and normally I have like over 20. It was just strange. I don't know where all these comics have gone away.
Do you think maybe everybody was like, okay, this biweekly thing is bullshit and we're just not doing it? But it's not actually, like one, the company.
One thing I meant to discuss on the first show back, but again, I was out of my mind, was that I did take the break to cut a bunch of books. So maybe that's what's happened.
Well, maybe then you're feeling that.
Yeah. Spoiler warning. Let's get it out of the way.
Yes.
Lest people complain, there'll be spoilers in the show for the books that we are talking about. So there you go.
Yeah.
Josh, pick.
I did have the pick. The pick of the week this week is Southern Bastards number 19. Sorry. You could see the moment where I was like, I believe I've made a typo here, or I'm confused. And it turns out the answer was both. We are back with part 5 of the Gut Check story. This has been somewhat irregularly released, if I'm not mistaken. So
super regular, yep.
Basically, where we are here is like this was a pretty classic episode of where it felt episode issue where we were felt like we were getting things back on track. Meaning the what's his name's daughter who has been stalking around for
Earl
Tubb, Ms. Tubb. She's been stalking around for
I don't know.
I mean, literally like in real time the better part of 2 or 3 years now.
Yeah, and I mean this was a super. I mean, all these issues are good for the most part, but like this was the first one where the delays really, really made me feel like I had real trouble following what was happening.
Yeah, but it was also the one where like I was like, all right, I know where we are. I know let's get moving. Like this is the thing. She meets the coach.
Coach Boss.
You know, Esau. I was like, there's been Esau character development, I think, to a certain extent, which I liked. And there's the crazy bow hunter from the woods shows up. You know, they sort of up the thing on the other evil boss who has a nickname who basically gets killed For being an asshole. And, you know, so basically all of the stakes are raised, all of the tension is brought up, and it was just, it was what I want out of a Southern Bastards issue.
Yeah, I just, like, I didn't remember the bow hunter at all. So when the guy showed up at the end and shot the daughter in the hand, lest she kill Coach Boss, I was like, who's this guy? Just because it's been so long and there's so many comics.
I think there was a guest artist on the issue that he...
No, I now that you've said it, I have a vague recollection right. of the story, but
I think he's like a Christian fundamentalist kind of character or something, and he.
Yeah, I vaguely remember some sort of swamp
that issue
family.
Was sort of like I think Scalped. I want to say 27, the infamous mm-hmm. one that didn't get the pick of the week for Blackest Night number one, basically, where it was a sideways thing about, you know, like a sort of character that we didn't know about or didn't matter, but, and this is sort of the payoff for that, whenever that was, which was may have been years ago. Mm-hmm. At this point, you know, but we had, I really love the fact that, and this was planned into it, it's not new, but I love the fact that, who was the coach's like assistant, the blind guy who died? I forget. I don't know anyone's name, and I'm sorry. This is, I can't go back and read all the issues to get on that, but yeah. Everybody knows who we're talking about who reads it. You know, he died, and now the team is no good anymore.
Right.
And so
he was the secret genius behind
right.
it all.
So their whole reason, really the whole reason for Coach Boss's power base is gone. And, you know, and so they're all kind of trying to hold it together, even though that time has sort of passed. And I like that.
Yeah. This is a darker Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it was all very good. I mean, there's lots of things happen here. You know, the sheriff and his high school girlfriend, who he's in love with, still get together and. And, you know, you're right, the sort of the weird car dealer with the monkey weirdo Buddy Garrity, yeah. He gets killed. And, you know, and then there's the confrontation where Coach Boss and Earl's daughter are out on the field with her AK-47. And I was like, well, I guess this could end real quick, this whole story. I don't know how long it's planned to go for. But then the bow hunter shows up. So it was very good. You're right. It was this issue, another issue we're going to talk about coming up, where I was like, I just don't know. I'm having trouble.
See, I think the difference between that was very Marc Maron of you. I think the difference between you and me is that when something comes out for you that's been a long time, you're very aware that it's been a long time. I'm not. Yeah. And yeah. I blame myself and my lack of cognitive ability. So I'm like, it must be me who can't remember. Because it's just a thing. Anybody who's listening to this show knows that, like, I will get things. I know what to look for, but I won't remember details over a long period of time because I don't have room for it. And so I just take the blame myself.
There was a sequence in the middle where I wasn't sure if it was Latour. It was when the sheriff and his ex-girlfriend were under the bleachers during the game, and I was like, I mean, it kind of looks like Latour, but it kind of doesn't. I mean, clearly the first part was.
I see what you're saying.
He's got those unmistakable Latour noses, but in the beginning. And then I was like, wait, is there like a second artist in this? And I literally scrolled to the end to see uh-huh. if there was a different artist also.
I think it's just the way that he drew it in order to indicate that it's dark in there.
Maybe.
I see what you're saying, but I like on closer inspection, I think that's him.
I'm sure it is. It's just, it looked different than the way he normally draws. The rest of it was great. I mean, I did like that the team got fired up by killing, the fuck is this guy's name?
Mac. It's in the thing at the beginning, the recap, and also they say it.
McCluskey.
There you go.
I shouldn't, but the thing is, it's not real, so I can. Mm-hmm. When Coach Boss hit the monkey with the bat, with the wood, that was such a terrific panel, ending with the whap of it hitting the wall.
Uh-huh. I don't think that I had noticed the monkey was there until that point, and then I was like, oh, right, there's a monkey, because like it almost looks like a ghost monkey in the one where it's jumping at him.
Yeah.
Like, so I was like, wait, what is this? Did this just turn supernatural? I really had that thought.
Well, the monkey was on McCluskey's shoulder previously. Parrot.
I see it now, like, I remembered it, but I just hadn't registered it. You know what the real problem here with the team's winning streak is?
What?
He's wearing pants.
Yeah, right. He shouldn't fuck with any kind of superstition. He should be wearing his tiny shorts.
I mean, you know. maybe that's a symbol that they're putting in there for us to subliminally sort of pick up on, but I can't, pants are not a good idea.
It's interesting to consider this book because with Scalped, there was a clearly defined adversarial relationship between the two leads, and then there was the crime family story. Mm-hmm. Here, you're not really sure where this is going. Is it a revenge story? Because the daughter's hardly in it. Is it about Coach Boss's redemption? Is it just about the town? Like, it doesn't, and that's not a criticism. It's just interesting that I don't really know what the story of Southern Bastards is.
I feel like it's the town and the football program. I mean, if anything, it's Coach Boss's story.
Right.
Out of anything.
And the thing is, it can go any direction. I think you could even even lose Coach Boss and still continue the story of whatever's happening here.
They're all bastards. You know? That's where it's at. So, you know, I was happy to have it back. It really still doesn't feel like any other book that I read.
No. And most other Image books aren't. I mean, this is a pure crime story. It's not supernatural. It's not a horror book, which is Image's milieu right now.
Exactly. There's zero supernatural. You know what? I hadn't really – I'm going to mention that in the thing we're talking about later. But, it's a Vertigo book is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of Vertigo book I would have loved in the early 2000s. That's what this is. And that's where I fell in love with Jason Aaron's mm-hmm. work. You know, that kind of thing. And that's what I want out of comics. So that we just figured it out for me, not necessarily everybody else.
You want monkey whacking.
I mean, unless, you know, like I said, I thought it was a supernatural monkey, so I'm not really going to pin on that. I want more shorts. I know that much. I want more of this new Skype ringtone. I know that. Bum, bum, bum.
So, interestingly enough, you and I, there were three issues in a Doomsday Clock, and you and I haven't actually talked about it. The first issue came out, you were not on the show, Ryan and I discussed it, slightly disappointed by it. Uh-huh. Issue two came out while we were on break, and issue three is out now. They just announced this week that the book is going bi-monthly, which is not going to help. It's an oversized book. I think it's like 32 pages as opposed to 20. Gary Frank on art and Jeff Johns on writing. So I don't know when the next one's going to come out, but this is issue three of this series, which we've been looking forward to for quite a while. It's where DC has supposedly been leading since the Rebirth number one issue, where the Watchmen, where we find out that, well, we have found out that Dr. Manhattan was the one responsible for everything after Flashpoint, you know, the whole timeline changing, people going away, costumes getting terrible, people getting younger. Huh. He's responsible for all of that. So we've been heading to this point in which supposedly the confrontation between the DCU and Dr. Manhattan is going to happen. However, three issues in of the 12, we're mostly mired in a straight Watchmen sequel.
Yeah.
Which is weird, which is not what I was expecting.
Really? Because that's kind of what I thought it was. But also, I didn't really read anything about it.
Well, I mean, I was expecting more. Issue two was more. And this is, I mean, obviously here we have Rorschach and Batman together. But I was expecting more of what issue two was, which is when the characters showed up somehow in the DCU, as opposed to the first issue, which was a straight up sequel to The Watchmen, taking place right after Watch. I wasn't expecting that so much. But it's important to note, which I didn't know myself, because it isn't really clear, or either that or I missed it, that this takes place in the future of the DCU. So it's not happening now. It's not now.
But it's not even the DCU. It's they traveled to another dimension.
That's not what I've read. That this is the future in the DCU.
Oh, I don't. Well,
that's why Batman's in a different costume.
I'm going to go ahead and make my own continuity there. In order to work with it.
I'm just telling you what I've read. I didn't know that. I thought the same thing you did. I thought this was a different, like a different multiverse. But apparently this is the DCU just in the future, and the rest of the DCU is going to catch up to it. This is what...
That's terrible.
Jeff Johns and Gary Frank were saying on Twitter, because people were asking about the Batman costume, because it's obviously different.
That's terrible. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on
time-wise, because Watchmen would have taken place in 1985, right? That was the deal.
So Watchmen was in a different universe. They cross over here. You see the mime. Oh, well, comedian gets, you know, he dies in Watchmen, and then Dr. Manhattan brings him over to the DCU through, you know, he wakes up in the water.
Right.
And mime and whatever her name is, Punch and Judy or whatever they are, crossed over somehow with Rorschach.
They crossed over into what would have been the future of the DCU. So I guess the time doesn't matter.
Yeah, the time doesn't matter.
All right, so it is they came into not the current DC universe, but the one that will be.
Then. It's now, now. We're in then.
I'm surrounded by assholes.
This is a weird book because it's obviously done at a really high level of craft.
Okay, so let's get into it because I have a lot of thoughts and they're not all straightforward.
Sure.
You've basically got to the thing of it here is that, like, yes, it's an extremely high level of craft. If you're going to do this, it's clear that Geoff Johns has thought really hard and long about it, which is a thing that he does. You know,
and this also feels like a Geoff Johns book, Geoff Johns book.
You're right. Yes.
It used to be able to identify a Geoff Johns book at 20 cases.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And
there's been
there.
Years and years where it hasn't felt that way, where he clearly has been stretched too thin. But this felt like a Geoff Johns book from 10, 15 years ago.
Yes. And not only that, he's – but also feels like it's clearly being thoughtful of being like Watchmen at the same time. Like it feels like they're achieving that goal. And then you have the same thing over with Gary Frank is that, you know, Gary Frank is – he's amazing. He's wonderful. Yes. And he's working his own style, but within the style of what Dave Gibbons had set up. I mean, it clearly...
Nine panel grid.
Yeah, but clearly also there's a composition, there's a pacing, there is... Yep. All of those things are very, you know...
Not as dynamic.
It's actually really interesting because I wonder... Because Alan Moore famously wrote extremely specific scripts, which is not something that is normally done, meaning... He'd describe exactly what would be on the page, right down to the composition of where everything is. That is really not the de rigueur thing to do. You kind of want to leave the storytelling up to your artist today. So it's not, you know, and his scripts are insane. I mean, like pages and pages to do one page, which is sort of a famous thing about that book. And I'm curious how they did it here. And I'm guessing that that Johns would have thought about it in those terms, or maybe they collaborated on it, but it's definitely planned. Anyway, my instinct was that I don't want to read this.
Right.
From the beginning, and I went to read the first issue, and I didn't finish it on first go because I was like, I don't know. I don't know what this is. I don't know what it is. Second issue came along, and I let it sit there until this week when I had to read it.
Yeah.
And I got about halfway through it, and I found that as we ramped up towards the end of that issue, I found myself suddenly being interested.
Yeah. And second issue was really good, I thought.
But at the same time, I was like, I still don't know that I want this. And I want to be clear, I don't really have a moral or political argument against this. And I said this before with Before Watchmen. I still believe it now. Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons signed the contracts they signed. It would be stupid of DC as a company to not take advantage of this extremely valuable property they have. They're doing it, you know, fine.
Yep.
Like, in a perfect world, they'd be like, well, Alan Moore doesn't want us to do it. But it's not like Alan Moore and DC got along really well. So
no, they don't talk anymore.
They don't have any reason to serve him. You know, and I know that artists are all over artists and writers are all over the board on sort of what the morality is. I don't really care. However, I do really care that it is a perfect piece of artwork that I don't know that we need to keep exploring. And right. And this is weird, this extending it. Now, no matter how well it's done, which it is, it's clearly well done. I don't know if it's a thing I want.
I think... Well, when Ryan and I discussed issue one, my feelings are mostly the same as before. It's that I don't know. I thought maybe through Dr. Manhattan somehow these characters would appear in DCU and that would be, you know, or they would find out Dr. Manhattan was responsible. So, but I thought it would be much more DCU heavy. I mean, clearly most of this issue takes place in DCU, but however, it still feels very much a follow-up to Watchmen, which is not what I was expecting, even using the characters. And that's tough. And then, you know, like very famously on our shows in the past, we talked about the fact that I never read the pirate parts of Watchmen.
Uh-huh.
We get a lot of pirate parts here in the form of a movie, a PI movie.
Oh, I didn't put that together, but I kind of skimmed through those too.
Yeah, it's like, well, okay, it's an allegory. What's happening? I get it. It's pirate parts all over again. And we spent a lot of time with old people watching that movie. Now, I did read the part at the end, the the old Hollywood rags, you know, Screenland Secrets. I read all that. That was all fun.
Did you figure out who knew Rorschach was before they?
Yeah, I figured, because we saw that he was black in the first issue.
Yeah, it didn't occur to me because I don't know that I was paying that close attention. I was kind of proud of myself. I was like, oh, it's that kid. And then I thought, of course it's that kid. That's super obvious. He has Rorschach's journal, and that's the last thing that happens in the book.
Yeah.
And so cause he's the one reading the pirate story too.
Right. So it's hard. I don't know what to make of this, you know?
You know, but so the combination of all that stuff is kind of compelling.
Sure. I'm actually really excited when this comes out because of that reason. Like,
yeah,
I really – Gary Frank's one of my favorite artists, so I'm always excited to get work from him. I think Geoff Johns is working at the highest level he's worked at in years here. Mm-hmm. I don't have a strong sense of how I feel about this, so in that sense, it's really exciting. I don't know what I'm going to get when I open it up.
Yeah, but there is also for me a sense of like, it's kind of shitty that they're working in a cover band.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I I know that,
but in a sense, aren't they all cover bands?
Yes, yeah, but because this is such a specific thing, I mean, basically, it is an impersonation. Mm-hmm. It's not like they've taken it and done a new take. I mean, that's what before Watchmen was to a certain extent, depending on which one you were reading. At least it was, you know, Darwin didn't try to draw like Dave Gibbons or something like that. But this is clearly, you know, the beats, the pacing, the dialogue, the everything is set up to be evocative of Watchmen as much as possible. Well, but while still, and this is respectable, maintaining their own styles. Well, at least the art. I think Geoff Johns is just doing an impersonation at this point.
It's fascinating. I'm really curious to see what this accomplishes. Mm-hmm.
It sells though, right? It's successful.
I don't know. I assume
so. I think it is.
But like from a story standpoint, I want to know what I'm very curious to see what this does. Like, you know, are they going to fix things or change things or revert things or what is the outcome of this? Because they've been building it up for so long, it has to do something at the end. They can't pull the old, oh, well, thing at the end. It has to do something to change.
Yeah.
I loved the sequence where Batman was reading the journal and Rorschach was getting impatient. Uh-huh. I thought that was a terrific a silent sequence with the body language. Was great when he was leaning back to look over his shoulder. I thought that was a terrific sequence. Also, I like the fact that the TV reporter is wearing an ascot while he reports from the streets.
Well, he should. I mean, I just think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, apparently this is all leading to something that's going to happen later on. Well, because you're right. I was convinced with this issue this was some sort of alternate DCU. Mm-hmm. But apparently not.
It's kind of problematic that they had to reveal that on social media.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that has to be explained to people. Like, because people, like, because no one could go with the flow, you know, and just be like, let's see what this is, you know? And like,
right.
Wouldn't it be better if at the end, you know, you get a Charlton Heston Planet of the Apes moment?
Right.
That seems like such a better idea than like, nerds freak out, creator explains it to them on social media. Like, put it in the text. Like, this is, you know, Alan Moore never did that.
Or just let it breathe. I mean, yep. Johns was really good at that with Rebirth. Remember, we talked to him about it. Everybody was freaking out in the beginning for Flash Rebirth because Barry wasn't Barry and he was at the end. Mm-hmm. But I guess...
It is amazing to me that people haven't figured that out yet. Because, like, literally, there's nobody reading comics now that hasn't been reading them for 20 years. You know, like, well, that's probably not true. But the people were freaking out anyway.
It's compelling. I have to say it is compelling.
It's not, which is a weird review. It's not like this is amazing. It's I'm still read. I still want to read it. But
hey, listen, compelling is better than most things I read.
It is, and it's interesting to see what's going to happen. You cannot deny that. Cool.
Batman's a dick.
Yeah. Yeah. Rorschach ate his pancakes, so he has reason to be grumpy.
So Black Science 34 was the other book I was talking about where I was like, man, I am barely hanging on by my fingertips with this book.
I've kind of felt like that for a while.
Yeah, I have too, but this was it. I also thought in our grand tradition, this might be the last issue, but apparently it's not the last issue.
No, it seems like it's the end of the arc.
It feels like that's the culmination of the whole goddamn thing what's his name?
Grant McKay.
Grant gets to go have a Field of Dreams esque conversation with his father in another dimension.
Yeah, is that who that was? I was like, wait, who's Chris McKay? Because I knew there was an uncle at some point.
I assumed it was his father because it wasn't anybody else's. No one else's named Chris.
There was a brother, there was an uncle, and I just wasn't sure.
I assumed it was because they were talking primarily about his father. And so...
I'll tell you, like, if you were ever going to do something hokey like that, this is the book to do it in.
Right.
Like, it totally fits. And it, you know, it's...
That's why I thought that when it said the end and we saw that it was property of Christopher McKay... Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, so is that the end of the – is that it?
I don't think you can end this whole thing with something like that. There's not enough to it.
Barely holding on.
Yeah, but I mean, I basically got it. They all ended up in a future, you know, and he doesn't have his intelligence and he – I actually understand and remember where we are in terms of the setting. What I don't really remember the stakes of who all the warring factions are. I'm like, oh, that's the witch. And those are all the people from the daughter's – kingdom that she married into, but I don't really remember who the threat is on the earth, and I don't remember which version of everybody is. That's really where it gets confusing. Is that Kadir? Is this the same Kadir that we've known from the beginning, or is this the one of this earth? Totally. But the way that I have, I suppose, justified it is that A, I blame myself because I can't remember things anymore, but two, this is sort of a breakneck story that, like, everything is coming at you, like the art even has that feel, you know, and I'm just sort of holding on and going with it, and as long as I'm picking up on the themes and I know who Grant McKay is and I know who his kids are, then everything else I can put together with context, I think, which is how I kind of have to read a lot of things. I'll pay 75% attention, and if I can still get something out of it, then it's good for me.
I mean the thing is, for if you have a breakneck comic like this, then Mateo Scalero is the one to draw it. Everything is this dynamic energy and movement to it. We joke forever about him needing to stop it, but it's great.
He's knocked that shit off. honestly, like, the thing that is actually bumming me out when I think about it is that when this is over, he should be a superstar.
Yeah.
And he's probably not going to be.
No, he's not in a Marvel book or a DC book.
I know.
But that's really, like, the thing.
They should be like, whatever can we do to get you to do this and give him some amazing project to work on? I don't care. I'm saying that would be good for him from a professional standpoint, and I want that. I want him to just do whatever. But we've seen this a lot where somebody comes along and blows you away, and they're on a project that is really – good, and you clearly know what it is, and then the next thing they do, you're excited about, and it's just like you have nothing else to grab onto after that. I'm thinking specifically of Raphael Albuquerque, same kind of thing. Like, he came on, blew us away. American Vampire end, and he sort of kicks around. He's a Batman sometimes. He'll do whatever. He does a lot of
variant covers.
Yeah, he does some weird thing for Dark Horse that isn't nearly as well produced or written as American Vampire, and then they kind of just disappear a little bit, or like Raphael Grandpa or something like that. You're like, man, look at the energy this person's bringing. Like, put them somewhere and let them shine, and that doesn't seem to happen. So I'm hoping that does not happen with Mateo Scalera, who is clearly he's dedicated. You know, he's been on this for a while. He's stuck with it. There's no fill-in artists for Black Science, thank God.
Yeah. So this issue marks we talked about this last week, a break. A pre-planned break, so they're back in the spring with more issues.
I feel like we just had a break.
I don't know, man. I don't even know how many more issues we're getting. I think it's six more. I think one more arc, but he doesn't say we'll be back with the final arc at the end. He says...
I don't need to know. You know, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
It's not like we're going to know when it happens. We're stupid. We're going to be like, is this the end? We won't know. We'll know because... We'll look and go, well, it hasn't come out for a year. And then we'll say it on the show, and then someone will write it and go, it ended.
Yeah, that book I did 4 years ago.
You dolts.
We do it for you people.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, I really liked it, despite the fact that I felt like I was holding on my fingertips. That kind of worked in the book's favor because the book was still breakneck pace.
Exactly.
I was like, I guess a lot is happening. Okay. And that was fine because it was all really well.
Yeah. So I want to like the Inhumans.
Yes, you do.
I don't.
You keep going back.
Ron was very mad that they became the center of everything, and I get it. But I keep waiting for like the Black Bolt Medusa Maximus story that is really gonna pull me in. And I recognize there are some of these other characters who are gonna be involved. That's fine. Some of them are all right. Some of the Charles Soule created characters are all right. I really like that Reader character. I really like his power set, how they use him. I don't even mind the cop with the eyes at this point. Anyway, so this Inhumans Judgment Day number one came out, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to try that because it's here. But largely approval rested on the fact that I saw Mike Del Mundo's name on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like his work. Now, he didn't draw the whole thing, but the other guy, Kevin LeBranda, who drew other parts of it, was actually pretty good. I actually like what he was doing too. Mm-hmm. But Mike Del Mundo is becoming one of those people. When I see his name on a book, I check that book out, and I will probably read it. I'm very excited about it. So I missed whatever happened in whatever other book. This is written by Al Ewing, who, in my experience, is okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he seems to be getting a lot of work and doing a lot of things, and I've checked out here and there's never blown me away. But it's not bad. It's okay. It's fine. We have like basically a. What I liked about this book, though, from a moment standpoint, was there was Medusa and Black Bolt after fighting, in my mind, or being at odds needlessly now for years. They sort of came together and at least accepted where they were at with a sort of detente of the hostilities. Like, it's not going to be like it was, but I miss that you were here for me and you miss that I was here for you. And that was nice. It's actually a really nicely written section where they're talking about Gorgon, who is the goat leg guy who is dead. And Black Bolt's like, did you love him? And she's like, of course I loved him. He was like my family. We've been friends since we were children, all this stuff. And she goes, I loved him. Didn't you? And he goes, yeah, I loved him very much. And she realized like what they were talking about. It was sort of a different kind of thing where he'd had sort of a jealousy, and she's referring to the Royal Inhumans family as a family. And she gets her hair back, and cause she was short gray hair cause she'd lost her power in this for some reason, which was probably stupid too. But I liked it. It sort of, it reset the table and took away all these conflicts for these characters that didn't need to be there to make them interesting. This is
right.
This is West Wing season 5. West Wing season 5 is Aaron Sorkin leaves and they don't know what to do to make it interesting. So they start making the characters have conflicts with each other. And that is not the strength of this. The strength of the Royal Inhuman family is that they are a family and they work together and they fight things from the outside. And that is always better for me.
Well, it's also interesting that, you know, where characters are constantly being reset, these characters hadn't been reset in a while. It's been a while.
Yeah, well, they were getting further afield because people kept trying to figure out what to do with them and how to make it interesting. And so they'd go further and further. And there are bright spots in there. There are things that are good. But I liked this. I quite enjoyed it. We'll see if I remember to buy it next time. if that's how it works. But Mike Del Mundo is never bad. And again, this Kevin LeBranda guy I thought was pretty good too. These are you know, it's really interesting art happening on these books.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always good.
The Flash number 39, also the Flash number 700.
Yes.
And you have to, I guess, give DC credit for not pulling the Marvel thing and putting the 700 on the cover. They used to put it on a variant cover.
But it's weird because they did do it on Detective and...
It was the same thing, Action. I think. Didn't they? Well, yeah, you're right. They only renumbered those comics, which was strange.
For now.
So this is a return of Carmine DiGiomenico, the best artist in the book, with Josh Williamson.
Yes.
And this is the first issue of a new arc. I was correct. I actually corrected myself, and I was not wrong.
Nice work.
First issue of a new arc, and it's a good jumping on point. It reestablishes a lot of things. This is the issue in which Barry, after having told Iris that he was the Flash, now introduces her to his life as the Flash. And so we get kind of an overview of everything. So it's a good jumping on point if you're interested in the Flash. The Flash from the new Superman book, from the Chinese Justice League, shows up to hang out with Kid Flash. And then we end up with a big reveal of Grodd at the end. I thought it was a fun like reset, and I just loved looking at the pages. There was a lot. It was really colorful. There's a lot of lightning in this issue. Ivan Plasencia, he got his money's worth this month. This book has that, I don't want to say Matteo Scalero energy when Domenico draws it, but it kind of does. It has that feel of movement.
Well, the last couple have been from the guy who drew it with
Luch.
The, Huh?
The Googe?
No, no, the guy, you know, the guy who drew it with Jeff Johns.
Oh, right, 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 right.
I can't think of his name.
From Justice League.
Yeah.
No. JLA. Yes.
Right, but who's the Jeff Johns artist for his huge arc?
Scott Collins.
Scott Collins. It's had Scott Collins and Howard Porter for a while. So those all fit really well. And then Gian Domenico. I have to look at it to say it. I'm sorry.
Gian Domenico.
And when I was putting the script together, I was like, I was practicing it. And then when I went to say it on the show, I couldn't do it. And that wasn't because of a brain fart. It's hard. It's a lot of syllables. Anyway, they all had a really good energy. And I think going back with energy, and it just fits the book really well. But right away, when you start reading this book, it looks great. But I've also, you know, I've known Joshua Williamson for a long time. I've known him. I've known his work. And there's just, I've never seen a writer show up on a mainstream project property like this and just fit so perfectly, so instantly, and so for so long consistently. It's really something. I mean, he's definitely working in the style of that Jeff Johns arc that is probably the one that he grew up with and is the most, you know, influential to him. But he's been perfect for this, and he's just been on fire the whole time. Even the parts that weren't like my favorite parts of it, like, it was good. Like, he did a good job. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's right, it's correct for the character, and I find that very impressive. Right guy at the right time.
I love the way the lightning sort of drips off of Barry. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always kind of like crackling around his
I thought we didn't like that.
No, what I said was, if you're gonna have the dumb lines on the suit, at least make it look like it's alive, which is what this art team does.
Is that a TV show thing?
No.
Okay.
The TV show actually does a much better job with the costume. I mean, he has some lines, but they're much more subtle as opposed to these weird, like, I still don't understand why he's got a little outline on his knee. Mm-hmm. But like, if you look at the variant cover for 700, like, it just looks like a guy with dumb yellow lines on his suit.
I feel like that's just to indicate like an athletic kind of suit. Like, it's where a pad would be or something.
I guess.
Like that. I see what they're
going. But the way that they have him, when he stops and there's lightning sort of dripping off his ears coming off his arm, like, it just makes it feel like he's constantly sort of buzzing around, which I like.
I will tell you something about that. I know why they do it. I know why you put Grodd on the cover, but this would have been a lot better if they didn't put Grodd on the cover.
I agree. I don't think you needed Grodd on the cover.
I don't think so. If people were going to buy it anyway. But I mean, but also, you know, if you weren't going to buy it and you're like, I love Grodd, like, you might do that. And I just
don't know. I mean, please, if you're out there and you bought this comic because of Grodd on the cover, let us know. I just don't know that there's anybody out there who's like, Grodd, and bought the comic they weren't going to buy anyway.
You know what, though? Quite honestly, A, that Grodd cover is a really good cover.
It's a good cover.
It's a really good cover. And when I saw it, I got excited to read it. So I can't, but I would have been more excited. I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't have. Maybe I'm trading excitement up front for excitement at the end.
Right.
You know? And if you're selling comics, you need to put as much excitement up front as you can. So, fine. I am patient, is what I'm saying.
So if you are a Flash person and you haven't read this comic, or you had fallen off, this is a good jumping back on point, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
This is a great team on the Flash. It's nice to see it being so successful.
Yep.
Saying, if the day comes when they need to switch things up, you get some Mateo Scalero in there in the Flash.
Boy, that's not nothing.
Quick break to tell you how to support iFanboy. Go to patreon.com/iFanboy. That's one of the main ways you can help. That's where you can go and you can give a little bit of money. You can get involved in voting on the patron pick. You can get a dumb superpower. You can hang out in our monthly hangouts. We just did our last one last week, in which Josh went through one of his long boxes in his murder basement. It was a fun time.
Just a regular basement. It's unfinished and it has boxes in it.
It's a fun time, and if you want to help us out, that's a great way to do so. Also, ifanboy.threadless.com is where we have our t-shirts. We have 6 shirts: the Pick of the Week podcast, the ratings, the If One Is Electro, and our brand new shirt, the GDAT, that go along with our iFanboy logo shirt and our Herm shirts. So you can check those out. We got another design coming soon. We're working on it right now. We'll hopefully be releasing that to you in the coming months. But check out those designs. You don't all have to get them on t-shirts. You can get them on almost anything that Threadless offers, from mugs to shower curtains. So check it out at fanboy.threadless.com. Also, fanboy.com/support. That's where you can help us out directly. If you want to donate via PayPal, you don't want to become a member of Patreon, which is totally understandable. You just have a couple bucks to give away once and not every month. You can go to do it there. And that helps us keep the lights on. We are in the process of upgrading a bunch of stuff, including our podcast server. So that's going to all go to helping that out. And we appreciate everyone does it. Also, we've got a new page, ifanboy.com/Amazon. That is where you can find all the books we've talked about on our various Booksplodes, as well as all of the old books of the month. And also there's a general Amazon link there. So ifanboy.com/Amazon is also another great way to help out if you want to help out iFanboy. And thank you everybody who does those things.
Definitely.
And we have not talked about this book in forever.
Yeah, I actually hadn't read the last few issues. I think I sort of dropped off and I decided I'm just going to read this one because I have the pick of the week and I should give it a shot. And I think I finally realized what it is I like about the book, which is going to come to no surprise to anybody who's listening to this. But the more it's about the people and their interesting relationships and their stuff.
What book is it?
I'm sorry. Sex Criminals number 21.
I think the more people would really like to know what book you're talking about.
Listen, clearly, I'm having an issue today.
I didn't know you'd been reading this all along. I remember I dropped off it pretty early. I think Rana dropped off it pretty early.
I dropped off like in the last year, but I think I would read it like sporadically when I saw it. So I just thought like there's a thing about it I like, and it's not the dicks necessarily. I
you're not against the dicks.
No, I mean I like the fact that it's dealing with, you know, a lot of these issues in a way that is pretty frank, while not really exploitative and kind of interesting in real world. And I go back and forth between thinking it's sort of a gimmick and not. But I think generally it's a good thing. So anyway, the point is like the more they are dealing with the relationships of the actual people in here, the more interested I am in it. The more they get into the magic orgasm zone bank robbing thing with the sex police and everything, I don't care about that.
That's still happening?
Well, so like I said, I think I've missed a few issues in here, and the main couple, those people have broken up with each other, and this is sort of their life after the fact. This is your spoiler, like they both end up at the same party, and it's supposed to be a fancy dress party, meaning everybody would be dressed up, and they both are the only people there who mistake the fact that they weren't supposed to wear a costume because I believe it's on Halloween, and they're both dressed like Freddie Mercury. With the yellow jacket and the shorts.
Well, because, you know, generally fancy dress means costume party.
Yeah, I think that's the joke. But I don't really know about social conventions enough to be able to follow that.
You'd think that as an Anglophile, you would know this.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't pay attention to that episode of Peep Show so much. Peep Show is like the best show if you've never watched it. It's my favorite modern British sitcom by far. I don't want to get into it. This was largely about their sort of post relationship world and some of the other characters, and it's very person centric. It wasn't, you know, about crazy sex weirdo magic.
So is this as close as you're going to get to sort of a slice of life relationship book that you're looking for?
It's what it feels like. Yeah, I like a lot of those. So it's pretty good, and I really like Chip Zdarsky's work on it. I think it fits really well. It's not a Matt Fraction who needs to be impressive. It's a Matt Fraction who's trying to tell a story, and there's a big difference in those two people, but they both exist.
There. Luke Cage 169.
Wanted to check in on this. I think we were a little hard on it at the beginning of its sort of revamp after they left Iron Fist behind. And of course it's going to get canceled and end soon, but I thought this was probably the strongest issue of the reboot.
Yes, this arc is the best arc, and this issue was the best issue of this arc.
And because I'm not going to lie, it had a lot of moments that were completely cliche where he talked about putting boot to ass, and that pleases me every time it happens.
Well, first of all, I think Guillermo Sana is terrific, the artist. And one of the problems I had originally was that the art was really flat and uninspiring. This has actually got personality and it's got spark, interesting page layouts. I really like looking at this book.
Yeah.
But Luke Cage's voice was much stronger here, which is always the puzzling thing. I can't imagine that David Walker didn't get notes about toning down Luke's blackness after the last series.
Really?
Because he had such a distinctly urban voice in the last series, and then for most of this, he could have been anybody talking.
Yeah.
And then here he gets it back a little bit once the fight happens.
But and it's fun. It's like, you know, to hear him sort of use colloquialisms that sort of sound like him and which we'd gotten to know. And he's got this, it's funny because, you know, originally we started as a sort of blaxploitation character, and here he's got this world weariness, you know, indicating an older character who's been through it and doesn't have time for any of this anymore. Like, he's just tired of it. But, you know, when he does those sort of big moments where he'll use what is basically a catchphrase about kicking people's asses, it's fun. It just makes it fun. And
he's a great character. Yeah, he's really one of the best characters in Marvel. Mm-hmm. It's a bummer the book's getting canceled, but
you know, and we can thank Brian Bendis really for that, because he's the one who brought him back to the fold.
Forefront.
Yeah. Also, the cover for the next one looks great because he has he's like a knight with shining armor, and there's some orcs or something like that.
Well, he's telling his daughter a bedtime story, and I suppose he'll be the hero of it.
Cool.
That'll so you'll be into that. Maybe that'll be on your week, and you'll have dad tears, and you'll pick it.
It's a good issue. I hadn't written off the book, and I'm just wanted to make sure that if it's still around, you should still read it.
Somebody asked us lately a couple weeks ago if you were reading Hellblazer, and I said I thought you were still reading Hellblazer.
I'm reading The Hellblazer. That's the official name. This is actually, we're getting to the point where we're on The Hellblazer 18, and we really are getting back to the point where it feels like the old book slightly. There's no swearing in it. It's a little...
It's not Vertigo, though, right?
It's not Vertigo. It's still DCU, but basically the main difference is that they replace the swear with, like, little symbols, you know, like the little Satan symbols.
Comic symbols. Comic swearing.
Yeah. You know, the art feels sort of like it. I don't know if this writer, Richard Kadri, is British, but it feels authentic. There was a little while where I think they had Tim Seeley writing it, and the British was off. I was like, that doesn't sound right. And I think you have to have a British person on this, unless somebody is an amazing mimic of sort of that very specific dialect, I guess. It's like it would be an okay arc from the old series. That's what this is, you know. Right. So
well, that's good. I mean, that's better than an okay arc from the old series is better than a good arc from the new one, I guess.
Yeah, it's really the case. Like, it doesn't feel like they're trying to do a different version of this guy. It feels like the guy, and I'm going to take that for now. So,
Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps 37, not written by Mark Waid and Al Ewing and Jim Zub, written by Robert Venditti.
Oh,
apparently
I did not finish the script.
Much like Flash, this is a great, great jumping on point if you're interested at all in the Green Lanterns. This, as I mentioned before, this is the book, as opposed to the Green Lanterns book, which features Simon and Jessica, the new Green Lanterns. This is the book that features Hal and John Stewart and Guy Gardner and Kyle Rayner. So your old school classic Green Lanterns all together in a team. And as many readers know, I love when they do the villain swap. So here they're face off against Zod and his family. So you get Hal Jordan and them up against the Superman villains, which is fun because they're completely outmatched. But also, did you read Action this week, Josh?
I did, of course.
This ties into that story because here the Green Lanterns stumble upon Zod and his family colonizing that planet from the Action Comics, from this week's Action Comics, in which in the future they're running it. This is where they find them basically starting to build on it, like at the very beginning. So it was a nice little tie-in between the two books. So I guess you could infer they will be unsuccessful in stopping Zod because in Action Comics they have a whole planet empire. But great jumping on point, fun action, a lot of the Green Lanterns getting their asses handed to them by four Kryptonians. This is a really terrific book, and I love these characters, and they're really fun together because they've got so much history together. And now the Guardians are back in charge, so there's a lot of tension there because no one trusts them. This is a nice little reset in the same way that Flash was. So if you're interested at all in Green Lantern or Flash, this is the week to check those books out.
Yeah, that does sound fun. I also still like Action Comics. That book's wacky.
No, this was a great issue, and I think this was a nice tie-in. You might want to read this one because it's oh, shit, wow. I guess Hal failed.
Nice.
But this week, the patrons picked the book for us to read on the show, and this was a fun little voting week because the book that was in the lead. So basically, for the people who don't know, who aren't patrons, we open up voting on Wednesday so people can actually read their books before they vote. Wednesday and Thursday is voting because we record on Friday. And all day Wednesday, the lead was held by Legion number one. We woke up Thursday morning and Marvel 2-in-1 number two was the pick from Chip Zdarsky and Jim Chung.
Now, there's lots of reasons why I would have read this anyway. Marvel 2-in-1 number one, I think, was Matt Rosenberg. I might be wrong, but I liked it. I don't remember what it was.
I think it was Chip Zdarsky, wasn't it?
I don't know. Because this is the first part of this story, isn't it?
No, this is the second part.
What am I thinking?
You're thinking of a different book.
Huh. Well, maybe they're relaunching a bunch of those. Maybe I didn't read that. But either way, I hadn't decided on Chip Zdarsky. His stuff is usually in the wacky funny area, and it's not really my thing. I thought this was a very good script. I really I enjoyed reading it. I didn't get a lot of that. But who cares about any of that? Jim Chung.
I thought this was terrific.
Yes.
I think I had planned on reading the first issue because of Jim Chung, and then it happened during the break, and I just missed it. And I didn't read it specifically because I think part of the fun of the patron pick is if they tell me to read a book in the middle, I'll check it out in the middle and see how it goes. So
right.
Without having read the first issue, in which I guess Ben Grimm discovers this message from Reed Richards saying, hey, you should go find this device because it'll help you keep being explorers even though I'm dead. He tells Johnny a lie because Johnny's all depressed and says, actually, Ben and Sue and the kids are still alive and this device will help us find them. So he enlists Johnny in this adventure and fall under false pretenses to find this device. So here it's just the two of them going to Monster Island from Fantastic Four number one to find this device because that's what they think it is. They think the clues point there. Dr. Doom shows up to help them and they end up having a giant monster fight until they realize the actual device is hidden somewhere else. And I thought this was a very un-Zdarsky-esque script. There was a couple of moments where it got a little bit like cringy, but I thought he did a really great job with the dramatic and sad moments because he's basically – Ben Grimm is holding a lot on his shoulders, on his very – very rocky shoulders right now. Mm-hmm. And I love the flashback story to him and Reed in college that ended up solving the mystery. And he, you know, had his Doom was fun. I thought this was just a terrific issue, art aside, which of course Jim Chung is one of the best artists who doesn't work very much.
Well, like that's the thing is that I didn't read that first issue, but I completely, like I knew everything that was going on. I completely understood it. Like, I wasn't lost at all. It was explained to me. I was able to pick up from number two.
Yep.
There's definitely I miss these characters.
Totally.
You know, I was like, they're mentioning the Fantastic Four. They're putting Ben Grimm and Johnny Storm together, and that's fantastic. This is, you know, like this is a really good thing, and it looks great. And if I had any complaint, it would be that the Doom as written here is not really the same.
No,
as the Doom that has been in Iron Man, it was like he was more like his old self. He was a little more like he was, you know, insulting Reed,
right,
and that kind of thing. Where that the newer version of that doesn't seem to do that as much.
I would think. I mean, just this is me making excuses. I feel like even new Doom would still insult Reed.
I thought about that, but
because he's still so jealous of his intellect,
maybe.
But yeah. That's just me rationalizing. I'm downloading the first issue right now as we talk. I mean,
yeah, I already did.
You're right. This had me really. I was actually really excited after I read this. I loved the art. I loved the story. I loved this. I loved the characters. I love when Ben Grimm is written really well. I just hope the Disney Fox deal means we can get the Fantastic Four back in some real way at Marvel.
It's
and give them a great creative team. Because when Hickman did it, I read the whole that run was true, was great. I read all that stuff. Yeah. I love the Fantastic Four when they're done really well, and that they feel the most like Marvel. Them and Spider-Man. When I read those comics, I feel like I'm reading Marvel, and I love this issue. I'm really happy they picked it because I wasn't going to read it because I missed the first one.
I would have. I actually figured out what it was. There was a Tales of Suspense that came out. It was actually in October with Hawkeye and Winter Soldier. It was written by Matt Rosenberg, and I thought this was the next one of that because the trade dress is really similar, and it's, you know, putting people
right
in together.
That's a great cover on the first one. Just am looking at it now. I'm going to read this as soon as the show's over. Thank you, patrons. Good job.
I agree.
I was really happy to read this. Ratings.
Ratings.
I'm going to give it a 4.5.
I don't want to split it because I might go 4.25, so I'm also going to go 4.5.
All right, and sticking with it.
Yes.
I'm going to finish the arc. I think Chung's only doing the first arc, as he always does.
You know, take what you can get.
We'll see what the next artist brings. As long as he or she is not terrible, I'll probably stick with it because I did like the way Zdarsky wrote these characters. So
yeah.
I mean, I only made it about 4 or 5 issues on Spectacular Spider-Man, so there's a possibility something will happen. But for the now, I'm sticking with this. This was super
There's going to be some shit going down when Johnny finds out. Just saying.
Yes. And As we mentioned earlier, if you're a patron over patreon.com/ifanboy and you give at the $5 level, you get your very own patron superpower, which we would bestow upon you. Can you tell this is the first time I've talked today?
Yep.
Bestow upon you on this very show live. So let's thank a couple of patrons.
Well, I mean, the first one is our friend Brian Moody, who everybody who's our patron is our friend, obviously.
Yes.
And if he touches a dish, it becomes clean.
Oh, that's awesome.
Tap. Do we have to wash those? I got this, says Brian.
In a giant word clink. Balloon?
Yep.
Oh, man.
Listen, I'm not going to fight it anymore. It is the zeitgeist. I got this. It's fine.
That would mitigate a lot of problems in my house.
Wow. We don't get personal a lot here. Well, you don't, but...
I just really need a dishwasher, and I have no room for one. So.
I have a dishwasher, and I'm actually whatever the sort of frugal New Englander inside me, I kind of hate using it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, we should just wash it. And it's funny because my mom comes over. She does the dishes like
the regular way,
passive-aggressively. I don't know that I might be projecting, but I feel because, you know, well, we never
you can feel the waves emanating from her.
She won't put stuff in the dishwasher.
I tell myself that, like, it's a meditative thing, but I would just really love to have a dishwasher. Anyway,
yep.
Tony Norgard.
Good name.
You know how, like, people say, like, Josh, like, go to your happy place?
Uh-huh.
Tony can actually go to his happy place.
Oh, wow.
He can just blink to it. Like, if things are going badly, he's stressed out, wherever Tony's happy place is, maybe it's Iceland, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Norgard could be Norway. But he goes to his happy place just for a little while until he feels better, and then he blinks back.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah. It may even be a magical fantasy land. Who knows? It's all up to Tony, whatever his happy place is.
Oh, so wait. He's controlling the happy place? He doesn't bring you to your happy place?
It's whatever his happy place is.
Oh, okay.
Like, when he's feeling stressed and needs to go to his happy place, the rest of us sit there and try to pretend like we're not in the dumb meeting. He just actually blinks away, which could be problematic because he could be in a really important meeting with the CEO of his company, and suddenly he's gone.
It's a reflex.
Yeah, he can't control it.
Meanwhile, he ends up in a strip club in the city of industry. The key to jokes is specificity.
Right. Zach. Let's thank Zach.
Keith Amaral.
No, you got to thank Zach.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, Keith, hold on. It's coming. Zach Lawing. When Zach is around an electronic device, it never hangs, it never does spinny beach ball, it never freezes, it operates optimally and coolly as it's supposed to.
So this isn't about power, it's about performance.
Yeah, there might be. Whatever it is that causes things to hang up, it's trying to run too many processes or whatever, he makes sure that all the pathways are clear. It's not something he's doing voluntarily, it's something that he exudes.
He just emanates it.
Uh-huh. And, he's a delight to sit next to in the office.
That would have been great for me yesterday because I had spinny beach ball for a second and I was like, oh no.
Oh yeah, you don't know where that's going to go.
Because that happened before and it ended up with me at the Apple store having to buy a new computer. So I would like to have him around.
Yeah, I might be staring at my 2009 iMac as we discuss this. I'm thinking like, how much longer can this go on?
Yeah, just a matter of time. It's got the built-in switch that makes it go boom.
It's 9 years old. I can't. What's funny is that this just again we'll get personal. When I bought this, I remember very strongly former iFanboy host Ron Richards saying I should not do that. And it's been 9 years. I mean, like we did the bulk of our later video shows were done on this machine. You know, like
wow.
It's done. It's been around a long time, and it's like if it died today, I would have no cause for complaint. But still going, still going. Maybe Zach is back there.
Before we move on to he could be under your desk, Keith. I want to thank Chris Lewis who maintains our spreadsheet because this morning as I was waiting to do the show, I was thinking of superpowers and I thought of two and I was like these are great. And then I looked in the spreadsheet and they were both on there.
Had you done them or had we done them?
One was me, one was Ron, okay. And then. Also, if I had done that last week, I would not have duplicated one. One of my powers last week was a duplicate. So Thank you, Chris, for maintaining that spreadsheet. Also, if a duplicate power happens, you just team up with your buddy. That's all.
Yeah. That's the other thing for me, like, I thought of it about a second and a half before I said it. So I didn't have a chance to check the spreadsheet, but there we are.
All right, Keith Amaral. So I don't know if this happens to you, Josh. You live in a cold and desolate place, but
yes, I do.
I will often have like a hot tea or hot chocolate. I'm not a coffee drinker, but I'll have a hot drink, you know, in the wintertime. And I'm a big tea drinker. And, you know, if you nurse it after about 20 minutes, it's lukewarm. And then you have to either just live with it or you have to add more hot water. And then your whole flavor ratio goes out of whack. It's a mess. Keith's hot drinks always stay hot.
You know, they make cups for that.
Yeah, but Keith,
I'm just basically talking to you. I get it. Keith is good for that. Is it up and down the temperature scale, or is it only?
It just stays at peak hotness.
Oh.
He's not warming it. He's not actively making it hotter. Much like your peak performance computer, uh-huh. Keith's hot drinks stay at peak hotness.
It's only hot, though. It doesn't work the other way.
No, only hot.
So his margaritas will continue to warm.
His margaritas will the ice will melt and it'll water down. Uh-huh. But not his coffee. Mm-hmm. His coffee always stays peak. If the waitress comes by and says, "Warm it up for you, honey," he says, "No thanks. It's warm. It's always warm." And then she goes, "Huh?" And he goes, "Don't worry about it. It'd take too long to explain. This is two guys." And then it would be a whole thing, and then she wouldn't, you know, she'd like, "There's a weird guy in table six," and then it would be the cops. It would be a strange situation for Keith. But his drink stays always peak hotness. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go. If you give it a $5 or higher level, you get your very own superpower.
So I have a cup that I use I put my coffee in, and it mm-hmm. keeps that warm because I'm a very slow coffee drinker. However, if you do that with tea, it stays so hot that you can never drink it.
I have one of those Yetis that I use for cold water.
Uh-huh.
I've never used it for hot liquids.
Try it.
I suppose it would work the same way.
Try it. You should try it.
But I think part of the fun of the hot drink is holding it in your hands and the heat keeps you warm. Uh-huh. Anyway, this is
I've become quite a coffee drinker, largely to the fact that it is cold and desolate here, and I'm not as fat as I used to be, so I'm freezing all the time.
And you have two kids. You don't sleep.
Yeah, oh, it doesn't affect me anymore. Basically, when I was
caffeine?
Yeah.
Wow, your body broke.
Oh, no, I'm at three or four a day now. So basically, when I was about 36 or 37, I started drinking alcohol, and I started drinking coffee, and I got addicted to the right one, given... you may have noticed before, I've really gotten into margaritas lately.
So wait, hold on. Have you moved on to like espressos or like super strong coffees?
No, just regular coffee, but it's more of it. Regular. And it's not because of like I need the caffeine to wake up or whatever. I just really enjoy it.
And what does the tequila do for you?
The problem is that I really like margaritas, but I can't really drink them so if I were to go out to a restaurant and be like, "I will have a margarita with that," I can drink it, and then somewhere middle way through there, it will hit me and I'll be like, "Oh, I have to stop now. I can't have another one and we're going to have to wait here for some time."
Oh, wow. All right. Well, we would have done an email. We took a nice little journey into Josh's current beverage scenarios, which was fun for me.
Yeah, it's really
fun. And as we said at the top of the show, it's all about fun.
Yeah.
So if you want to email us at contact@ifanboy.com next week, we'll get you on the show. So this week we released Booksplode. In our newest Booksplode episode, the Booksplodes and the Talksplodes were unlocked by the patrons. We reviewed Iceman Volume 1, Thawing Out, the first edition of the Scene of Grace series that was recently canceled. We talked about one of the issues with Ryan Haupt, and Josh and I decided to go back and read the first volume, and we talked about that for about 20 minutes on the Booksplode. It was an interesting discussion, interesting book. So yes. Check that out in the feed behind this one.
Yeah, I think it's worth reading.
Yes.
We have a Talksplode coming up. I owe you a Talksplode for December. Those of you who are like the three of you who are like, "This is not what I signed up for. This is bullshit." I'm bringing in a ringer. Later this week, you can expect a conversation with me and artist, writer, everything Scotty Young. Provided all goes well. I suppose it could not show up, but it's going to show up. And then there'll be another in the month of February. And that is TBD.
And then we have a Patreon hangout for patrons. We did one for January. As I said, we went through Josh's Murder in Basement Comics.
Standard basement.
February is coming up. When will we do it? Soon, probably. I don't know. It could be at any time. We haven't discussed it, but yeah, you've got February to look forward to. And then also in February, Gotham by Gaslight, the new animated original series movie based on the Mike Mignola drawn one shot is coming out, and the Animated Brain Trust is very excited to watch and talk about it. So you'll be, look forward to that. That's probably coming in 2 weeks, so look forward to that soon.
Awesome. You can head over to ifanboy.com to find all of our podcasts, video shows, and all the articles that we ever did. They're still there, although they are aging rapidly. When did I do that? Oh, that was a long time ago.
Oh my God, I had that happened to me yesterday. I have a bunch of Batmobiles in my office at work, and I was looking at them, and I was like, didn't I write an article about Batmobiles? And I Googled it, and I was like, yeah, I did. And I was like, holy shit, that was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Anything significant we did was at least that long ago. Actually, you know, 10 years ago for us was really, it was when you and I both went full time.
That's happening this month. Yeah.
And so a lot of the things that were really milestones for us happened in 2008.
When we were 30. Yeah. Yep. Ugh.
Well, in a little while, it'll be 10 years since we went to Stanley's office and interviewed him and had one of the best days of my life.
That was a great day. I still have that photo on my wall in my apartment.
So if you want to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out, you can like facebook.com/ifanboy or follow @ifanboy on Twitter. Follow us individually on Twitter and Instagram. I am @JFlanagan and Connor is @CSKilpatrick on Instagram.
And yeah, listen, if you like the show, review it on iTunes. We thank you. But I want to get back into the margarita thing. So are you like a frozen margarita guy or are you drinking just standard margaritas? Are you salt?
Standard.
No salt?
I'm a salt person.
Salt, you're a salt person.
Standard. Yeah. I don't care so much about the alcohol, but I suspect it will taste different without it. So,
what kind of margarita is it? It's like a regular margarita, Cadillac margarita.
Regular. I don't know what you're talking about. Like I don't even know.
You have to come next time you're in town. I've been taught how to make margaritas by the Margarita Master, and I make a really mean margarita. I'll have to make you one. See what you think of it.
Okay.
Next time you're in town. Also, there's a couple of great places around LA that I go to that have great margaritas, not surprisingly. Anyway, this was the show. We talked about comics and also alcohol, apparently. Mm-hmm. So that happened.
Yeah, like you listen to a 40-year-old man talk about alcohol in a completely cool way, and 20 years later, or more than anybody else in the world ever does. So
listen, we apologize. We skipped an email because of it. These things happen. We'll make it up to you next week.
They're ready for next week. You don't even have to do the script.
That's true. I'll just copy and paste the next script.
Boom.
Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
Talk to you next time.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.